From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Today's guest and I were sitting having a cup of tea together recently and talking about, guess what, plants. What came up pretty fast was how lately we both sometimes cringe at the results to our online searches about one garden topic or another, which only seem to be getting worse in the age of AI, or at the misinformation we see on some viral social media posts. Ecologically focused garden designer Rebecca McMackin and I wanted to talk out loud here with all of you about what trusted sources we go to again and again, and about how we filter out some of the unhelpful noise when seeking answers to our garden questions. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for Away to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Rebecca McMackin is an ecologically focused horticulturist and garden designer and the creator of the newsletter Grow Like Wild, which now has a companion podcast version. In the opening of a TED Talk she gave, which has more than 1.3 million views, Rebecca says, "Full disclosure, I am the nerdiest gardener you're ever going to meet." Rebecca spent a decade as director of horticulture at Brooklyn Bridge Park, where she managed 85 acres of diverse parkland organically and with an eye toward diversity. And she more recently served as arboretum curator at Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx. And her acclaimed garden for Brooklyn Museum, which was planted in 2023, shows that ecological gardens can thrive even in the busiest spaces. And she was a Harvard Loeb Fellow in 2023 as well. So hi, Rebecca, good to talk to you again, even without the cup of tea.
Always a pleasure, Margaret. I actually have a cup of tea. So.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. You didn't offer me one.
I'm sorry.
So each of us, in a way, in our own way, as part of our job, you know, your old job at Brooklyn Bridge Park, our jobs as the writing we do, the now podcasting that we do, the teaching, the lecturing, a lot of parts of our jobs, our careers, are aimed at helping people find answers to their garden questions and to learn to garden smarter. And I think even when you were at Brooklyn Bridge Park, you didn't just show, you know, new members of your team how to do the hands-on work that you needed from them, but I think you actually taught them how to find information online as well, didn't you?
Absolutely. So that was a big part of the job, right? Teaching people how to learn, how to find information. Over the 10 plus years I was there, I hired over 100 garden staff between seasonal gardeners and full-time gardeners and managers, et cetera. And for each one of those people, all at, as you can imagine, really different levels in their experience and knowledge of horticulture, they all needed to know how to find the answers to their own questions. And, you know, I'm a bibliophile. My library is like literally problematically large, and I love books. But I also recognize that that's not where, especially newer generations of gardeners are really getting their information. And it is incredibly easy to find stuff online, to just punch something into Google and imagine that the information that's going to come back is going to be the answers to like literally the questions of the universe. But we found, and I think many of us find, that when you do just Google something, what comes back is often not actually the information that you need. And when you look at where people are getting their garden information from, 40% of people rate the internet as their main source of information. And that is coming from both YouTube and social media. And I'm concerned about that because when I go to YouTube and social media, a lot of the information that I see is not accurate, or it's by really enthusiastic, really, you know, talented communicators who maybe aren't the most experienced gardeners in the world. And so I just thought it would be really helpful along with you, one of the most, you know, talented
speaking
researchers. Talented, nerdy researchers of gardening, that we could help people, again, not find the information that we're necessarily looking for, but how to look for information on
right,
the internet.
Right. So it's like, I scroll down the list of results. You know, I'm searching for how to prune a rose or when to blah, 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 you know, when to sow such and such a seed or whatever. And, you know, I scroll down the list of results and I sort of have this built-in mechanism from being a journalist, an old school traditional form journalist for so many years, so many decades. You know, I'm sort of a research brain. You know, I filter and I'm like, no, that's not a good resource. That's not a trusted authority. You know, I kind of screen things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I'm prejudiced toward, like, if the URL has a .edu, like it's an academic institution, for example, that probably is going to get extra points in my book compared to just somebody's blog, right? Now, maybe that's, you know, an oversimplification, but that's one of the things when I'm just quickly pre-screening, you know, as I'm looking for authority in various ways. New information, you know, I look for the dates on things because, boy, if you have like plant pests and diseases, like I was recently writing about beech leaf disease, and, you know, this is something that's changing by the minute and there's all this research going on. And even if you get something from a research report from 2024, let alone 2023 or 2022, it's not going to have the latest by any means insights or knowledge or recommendations. And so, you know, I look for dates, you know, things like that. So yeah. I have a screening process built into my brain.
Yeah. I've learned so much from you about how to scan Google results, because I almost never use Google because I consider it not super trustworthy at this point. I have on my browser, I have a bookmark folder of all of the sources that I go to, rather than sort of rely on an algorithm to answer questions for me,
right.
I go to very specific websites and I look up very specific people, institutions, universities, and those are the places where I go and I put in those questions that I'm trying to answer, as opposed to, I mean, I do sometimes test out, like I remember my son, like a couple weeks ago, wouldn't believe that Luna moths don't eat. As adults, and I put it into Google, and wouldn't you know it, the top AI results said that the adult Luna moth, you know, diet was XYZ. And so I feel like the internet is kind of crumbling right now. We're watching with AI and all the algorithms trying to sell us things, right? That information is becoming less and less reliable when you rely on those search engines. And so,
right.
I really do try to, when I can, focus on certain individuals. It's the same way I get my news, right? I don't just Google things. I find the reporters who I really like in order to listen to what they say. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay. So we're going to start to give some examples, and maybe we can kind of go through some different categories. But I'll say that we're going to go through a bunch of things, and with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, I can give your list of some of those bookmarks and my list of some of my resources that I regularly use. You know, I can, so everybody doesn't have to start jotting like mad. I'll put those with the transcript. what example, where should we start? Like,
Sure. I think one of the things that in researching how people get their information, the big shift even over the last 10 years is YouTube. A lot of people find garden information and watch garden shows and try to answer questions on YouTube. And so I thought I could share just a few of my favorite YouTube channels for finding really, really good information. So I really love the Xerxes Society.
For invertebrate conservation. So a lot of insects and other invertebrates.
Exactly. And I'm going to come at this, you know, from a very ecological perspective.
Sure, sure.
I'm not going to be able to, if you have questions about peonies, that's going to be a different.
Well, I have answers for that. So I'll let them know that. Good.
Awesome.
Good.
Okay. Awesome. So Xerxes Society is wonderful. Definitely has an insect bent, but they offer a lot of information about just gardening in general
right.
for biodiversity.
But that's a trusted resource. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Universities, just about every
Yes.
university. I really like Penn State and Cornell, their YouTube channels. They have fantastic horticulture information, whole lectures from experts, and then just how to water, how to weed, just really basic stuff into the latest information on jumping worms. So I really recommend just subscribing to those YouTube channels and then watching when something interesting shows up. I also love organizations like Grow Native Massachusetts. They have free seminars, free speakers, and then an archive online of really, really wonderful lectures that you can watch on the topic as well. What are some of your favorites, Margaret, for more ornamental gardening?
Well, so with the ornamental stuff, I mean, one place I will look at, if I'm delving into a new genus of plants or an old genus of plants, again, like peonies you mentioned, or orchids, or whatever the heck, ferns, whatever it is, I might look and see if there's a botanical society for that. So frequently there'll be, the Fern Society website, and it may be the American or maybe the international or whatever, or the Orchid Society or the Peony Society and so forth. There's lots of those. Now, some of them don't have a lot of content on the websites, but sometimes they have local chapters. So if you really wanted to learn about ferns, or you really wanted to learn about rock gardening, or you really wanted to learn about whatever, you might find your local chapter, or you might at least look it up and then contact the email the person who's listed in your area and find out what resources they have. And if they have lectures like you're talking about and so forth, you know what I mean? You might plug into, again, trusted resources that are even more local, because with a lot of this stuff, local is important. But yeah,
Absolutely.
so I have a list on awaytogarden.com/resources of that includes a lot of those societies that over the years I've used. And again, some of them have tons of content, and some of them, like how to, why does my peony bloom, and how to plant the peony, and how deep, and blah blah blah. It might tell all that, or might not on other types of those websites. But that's one way to go. And then there's places like Missouri Botanical Garden with its plant encyclopedia, its plant finder kind of encyclopedia, part of its website, where I can search for a plant and I can read about where does it come from and how much soil moisture does it want, and what diseases is it prone to, and how tall does it get, and what zone is it, and things like that. So I use that a lot.
Those plant finders, I feel like there's so much technology out there now that really makes gardening and ecological gardening specifically just so easy. It's incredible that you can plug in your zip code and then just get a list of plants that support all of the animals that live around you. So those plant finders, there's all different levels of complexity. Like Missouri Botanical Garden is a very sophisticated one, right? Where you can say, I want a blue blooming perennial for sun. And it's got to be 3 feet high. You can plug in all of this minutia and it'll give you like what those plants are. It's an incredible resource. But there are some that if you're just getting started and you just really need ideas, there are some that are just a little bit easier. Like I really like Homegrown National Park has a good plant finder where they tell you a little bit of information about your eco region, like what are the plants that are of your eco region, and that is not just your hardiness zone, but considers geology and hydrology and all of those various things. And the plants that you get from Homegrown National Park are very often keystone species. So those are the most important plants you can plant on your land to support the wildlife around you. So.
Now, when you said before that on Missouri Botanical you were filtering, I've never done that there. I've done that on the Lady Bird Johnson, the
Oh gosh,
wildlife
do I have them confused? Let me go check.
wildflower. Well, that's okay, because I mean that's the problem, is we're both thinking in our heads of like big lists. But I've done that. I've done profile by profile, like I've searched for a particular genus and species of plant on Missouri Botanical and gotten all the information about that plant. But on the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center, down in Texas, on their website, their encyclopedia, you can not only do that, look for a particular plant, but then you can say, like what you were talking about, you want, ground covers for that are blue, that go 3 feet high and whatever. And it's like, why? It's amazing. It's wild. And for your zone, for your area, it's fantastic.
So, Margaret, I just Googled it and maybe it's new, but the MoBot does have this and
Cool. Okay. See, you're turning me on to new.
I
That's
know,
why I
right?
wanted to ask, because, like, again, we each have our ways of looking for things, and we haven't discovered everything about even the places that we go all the
I
time. So
mean,
that's great.
looking at this now, there's so much information here that I have never had the, a reason, and I would love to just explore it. You can literally search for plants that are black walnut tolerant, that are deer resistant, that support hummingbirds specifically. And so, yeah, like there's just, this is like a moment for technology that I think we're all sort of like being able to reap the benefit of in
This is
this
the
really,
positive version.
yeah,
This is not the AI creepy version. So what
exactly.
we're just saying is that that type of filtering is available on Missouri Botanical, and then for natives only, available on the Lady Bird Johnson site, which is fantastic as well in its own way.
And then I think the Audubon Society has another one that's like a pretty simplistic one as well, that'll just tell you like really good shrubs that have berries that birds really like, which is nice to know as well.
And local is so important in all kinds of gardening, but especially when we get to ecological, native plant gardening, et cetera, local gets more and more and more important. And, I always tell people, when I give lectures and so forth, someone will raise their hand and say, like, well, if it's a virtual class and there's people from all over the country, they're like, well, where should I look? And I always say, well, do you know your state or county native plant society? And usually the answer is no. But if not, go to, I think it's North American Native Plant Society website, NANPS. And again, I'll give all this in the transcript of the show. And they have a tab on their website of every state or county, so all the state and actually Canadian provinces too, native plant societies that exist. And that you can click over to your one for, Indiana or Missouri or, whatever, Ontario or whatever. And from that website, you can probably find access to plant lists and, guidance really hyper local, right? And sometimes even down to the county level. And again, even down to, hey, why not meet with some of your like-minded neighbors, at their monthly
Absolutely.
meetings and learn more that way. So
Maybe you don't need to buy plants. Maybe someone will literally
Well,
give them
and
to
they
you.
all have a tab about plant sales and seed swaps and so forth. So that's the most hyperlocal of all. So I love helping people filter down from that NANPS, that North American Native Plant Society website, to their state and, even closer to home, native plant website for info.
All horticulture is local. It's, you really do need to figure out what's going on in the ground right around your house or building. It's amazing. So I think beyond, just figuring out what plants to use, there's also a lot of resources online, like Lady Bird Johnson, where they really give you a lot of information about how to grow plants, what they look like, what their ranges are. And so that's a whole nother section of online resources where you're looking for information about plants when you know what you want to plant, but you need to know more about them. And so for that, I really do like Lady Bird Johnson. I think that is a wonderful resource. And then I think you were saying, Margaret, that you really use GoBotany a lot.
I do because I'm in the Northeast, and GoBotany was started by the former New England Wildflower Society, now Native Plant Trust, right? So it's geared to adjacent to where I live and garden. So it has the plant palette for my area. So yes, I do. I check there to see if something is native or near native or introduced or whatever in my area and get some basic information.
I really use range maps online. There's
I
so
am a
many
map
of
freak.
them.
I love
Oh
them
my
too.
God, it's amazing. And my favorite, there's so many good options now, but my favorite is the Biota of North America project, BONAP. I probably go to BONAP every day
Oh,
in
me
reality.
too. Me too. To
And you
see the
just,
range of a plant.
if you're not familiar with it, you put in a plant name. You can even just put in a genus, like Aquilegia, and you get these series of maps for every species in Aquilegia, and it shows you highlighted county by county whether or not that plant has been found in that county. And there's different color codes, like whether or not it's rare or it's, invasive or it's secure, or that there's different color codes that you can see how that plant has been found in the county as well.
And the thing, and again, that those range maps, they're not literally like, is it going to be on the hillside above my house. You know, it's not that granular, right?
Yes.
But you can go from there if you've been given sort of the general idea that, that plant is present in my general vicinity. Again, go even more local. I love to do searches when I'm looking into a particular area for the flora, FLORA, of fill in the blank. So I might be, you know, I'm Columbia County, New York, flora of Columbia County, New York, or flora of Maryland, the state of Maryland, or whatever. And frequently you will find that some either nonprofit or governmental agency or academic entity, or in some cases, like in my county, these two people who are two married scientists who at the Hawthorne Valley Farmscape Ecology Program have for more than 20 years been updating the flora of my county. And many times a week, I go to their list, their updated list, to see is that species of aster here or not? Which goldenrods are here or not? Do you know what I mean? It's and
That's
it's just
amazing.
it's incredible. So again, with a little more sleuthing, once you've looked at those range maps from BONAP or whatever, and you're like, oh, these are my goldenrods. Okay. You could even get more local if you can find out about, you know, the updated records in the flora of your county. So it's kind of fun, or from your Native Plant Society. I love this stuff, you know.
Totally. Yeah, I think the sleuthing part of it, I think, we're both researchers at heart. And so we love that. But the sleuthing part is really like you do need to like put in a little bit of effort to find things in reality
Right,
sometimes.
right. So we have maybe 5 4 5 minutes. What
Okay.
other kinds of categories, so to speak, of
I think that
knowledge?
the so like once you know your plants, you know about them. Sometimes we want to know the history of plants, the medicinal values of plants. You want to know the politics around certain plants, if you're me. You want to know the like how people have related to these plants over time. There are a lot of online resources as well for deep dives around plants. And for that, sometimes it's history even. My favorite resources are I love to use Arnoldia, the Arnold Arboretum's journal.
Oh, wow.
They
Yes,
have
the
everything
writing's
online. It's all
incredible.
free. You can just, if you want to know like the history of Davidia, how it came to the United States and where it was discovered, et cetera, that's all on Arnoldia. And it's beautifully written. Same with the American Horticulture Society. Every magazine is on free online for free since 1922. And you can really dive into the information there. And so that's like a lot about history and gardening. But from an ecological perspective, the government and the USDA have incredible resources online. They are not user-friendly. They take some sleuthing. But if you look up the Forest Silvics manual,
All right,
if,
Silvics, right.
yep, that amount, what comes out when you put in a tree species is like, what animals does this tree relate to? What types of
Right.
soil does it like? What are the other plants that want to live with this tree? Just in a huge amount of information that has been gathered over many decades by the government. The USDA also has a fire ecology website that we'll give you the link of, but it again, you don't think, I've never thought, okay, I need to know the fire ecology of this plant. I mean, increasingly, yes, as the world changes. But what you really get from that information from this website is like if you put in tulip tree, for instance, I was just looking at it before this podcast, and it was had a whole paragraph about which side of the slope to plant the tulip tree on and why. So really, really deep information. When you're really ready to read like 5 pages about one species, it's a great place to go.
Never been there. Interesting.
I think one of my last favorites, which is a little quirky, I know a lot of us are probably not using Dave's Garden often anymore, but if you remember back in the day, like even 20 years ago, Dave's Garden was one of the first places where people just got together and shared their plants online, their experiences with those plants and swapped seeds, et cetera. And I'm not sure how active it still is, but they have this feature that I still use once in a while, which is called the Botannery. And it's literally a botanical dictionary where you can take a specific epithet, like, I don't know,
So a species name, one of the species names. So,
exactly. Any species name like palustris, right? We all know Quercus palustris, the pin oak. You plug in palustris and it's going to tell you what it means. So a lot of like the the species name, if you remember, there's a genus and a specific epithet. The first word is the genus, the specific epithet is the second word. That second word is an adjective. And very often it's telling you information about
like of
that
the
plant.
Water or of the woods or yellow or
exactly.
You know, deciduous, or it tells you something, a quality often of the plant. Sometimes it tells you who discovered the plant, but it usually
exactly.
tells you an attribute. Yes.
And it's so helpful for getting to know that plant or even remembering those difficult to remember names when you know what they mean in Greek or Latin. And so I really love the Botanary. It doesn't get enough love. And
so it's a plant name dictionary. That's kind of
exactly,
fun.
Exactly.
Huh. Lots of good stuff. And there's millions and millions more. So don't be surprised if you hear these two voices again, folks. geeking out on other resources we use because we haven't even talked about books and journals yeah
classes all of
yeah,
it
yeah 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 absolutely but just to give you an idea that it's out there, it's just you have to know how to filter and how to be a discerning user, just like you would with anything else to establish trusted friendships, so to speak. So Rebecca, it's always good to speak to you, and I hope your tea was good.
yeah, it was.
And I hope I'll talk to you soon again.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Margaret.
Thank
talk
you.
To you soon.
Bye-bye. And thanks to all the rest of you for tuning in. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and researching about gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.